biomedical engineering as it exists today calls upon a challenge ranging from pure biology and pure chemistry and pure physics to the applications of all of these. And it's a intersection of many different sets. I would distinguish it from what we used to call biochemical engineering, which was back maybe in 1950-60 period, the fermentation processes using microbes to produce various things. And the biomedical engineering, as we see it now and as we saw it back in the 50s, was quite a different thing. Probably the best way for me to try to explain how it evolved in chemical engineering, which is a task that faces me in 3 weeks, so I have to explain it to my department, is as follows. It's a personal story. After getting my doctorate in chemical engineering at MIT, I went to work for the Dewey and Almy Chemical Company, which is or became a division of W.R. Grace, but at that point it was independent. This was about 1947. And for 3 years I was a full-time employee of Dewey and Almy Chemical Company, and in my position there as a research engineer, I became involved in what is called rheology, the properties of flow of various materials, almost all of them polymeric. Their suspensions of polyvinyl chloride powders, they were true polymer solutions like rubber cement and so on and so forth. And I became highly interested in the properties of flow of these materials, because all of them are complex. None of them are straightforward and simple. Their apparent viscosity depends upon how fast you're pushing them around and so on and so forth. Anyhow, for various reasons that are not part of this story, I came back to MIT as an assistant professor in 1950, September 1950, but maintained warm relationships with my colleagues, the former colleagues at Dewey and Almy, and indeed, with their help, devised some instruments for measuring viscosity of complex fluids. And so part of my history is devoted to rheology, and I think I have maybe 4 or 5 different instruments that I've designed to measure the viscosity of these complex systems. Anyhow, I came to MIT in 1950, and for the first 10 years, roughly, I was assigned to teach all the undergraduate classical courses in chemical engineering, stoichiometry, fluid mechanics, and so on and so forth, none of which had any connection whatever to do with medical engineering. And then, kind of by accident, and I would put it in the time frame of about 1959 or 1960, two doctors at the Peter Bett Brigham Hospital in Boston, by the name of Dr. Roe Wells and Dr. Robert Denton, having called up the Department of Chemical Engineering to find out who knew something about rheology, were put in touch with me, and they came over and said, "Can you help us measure the viscosity of lung mucus?" And it turned out to be an intractable job, a terrible job, because so widely variable, and the mucus itself is so complex, a mixture of thin and thick liquid. The net result is they turned their interest, and turned my interest, to the flow properties of human blood. And at first blush, we might think that human blood is a straightforward fluid, but it isn't. It's all, as we found out, it's complex. And it has what we would call a yield stress, that is to say, like yogurt or like mayonnaise, as you slowed down and stirring, suddenly it stops flowing so that you can get to the point where it won't flow at all, even though there's a residual pressure. And another thing that happened about the same time, which was about 1960, and to whom I should be indebted for bringing them to my attention, I don't know, but over at the Boston University Department of Biology, just across the river, there were two delightful professors, Herbert Berman and George Fulton, and they had undertaken to do cinephotomicrography, that is to say, put a microscope under a motion picture camera and put the microscope then on top of the cheek pouch of a living anesthetized hamster. So here's the hamster lying on the operating table. His cheek pouch has been everted, it's pinned down on the table. Blood is flowing through that cheek pouch, and they're taking pictures of it. And these pictures show how the red cells flow through the vessel, how they go in single file through the capillaries. They show what the white cells do and how they can cluster in the conditions of disease. And they show what the platelets do, and especially how the platelets, when there's a small puncture in a vessel, then lead within seconds to clustering and blocking the flow. And this, these films turned out to be extremely important to me and indeed to my colleagues, because when I showed these pictures, which Fulton and Berman had made for me, they gave me copies, to people like Edward Gilliland, the head of the department, and Tom Sherwood, one of the titans of chemical engineering, they were absolutely fascinated at what they saw, the motion of these formed elements, as they call them, the red cell, the white cell, and the platelet, through these small vessels, which is where, of course, all the complexity of exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide takes place, and everything else for that.